Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer. And I just want to remind you all, if you enjoy the Daily Friend Show, if you're a fan of it, if you like it, if you subscribe to it, please give good reviews on YouTube, on students, whatever. Comment below. Let's see that engagement stuff. It's always good to hear from you guys. Always good to know what's going on. Today, I'm joined by the venerable and wise Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, how are you?
I'm good, Nicholas, and how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And also the wise and powerful Marius Ruiz.
How's it, guys?
You don't sound very wise or powerful.
I feel like I'm in a bunker during the last days of Rome or something.
I don't think they had too many bunkers then, but I get the sentiment. And so, of course, there's good reason for you to feel that, and that is because the country has been engulfed in some very nasty protests. Well, protest is a generous way of describing a lot of what's been going on. So this begins with people saying that they support President Jacob Zuma and demanding that he be freed from prison. There was a support for protests and riots and that kind of thing. From some of Jacob Zuma's children, particularly one of his daughters, who seemed to pretty much actively be endorsing acts of vandalism and violence. And there has been violence, vandalism, and all that sort of thing indeed. Multiple times now, the N3 highway, which is one of the most important highways in the country because it connects Gauteng, which is the economic heartland, to our biggest port, which is Durban, has been closed by people blocking the road with rocks and burning trucks and all that kind of thing. There's been trouble in Jeppestown, in Joburg. There's been trouble all over KZN, people looting shops. There was a shopping center, I think, that was burned down in Pietermaritzburg. And so it's quite a disaster so far. The ANC and particularly President Ramaphosa have condemned this as a ethnic mobilization. So I guess the subtext here is that he's saying that Zuma is whipping up Zulu people to go and cause trouble. So, gentlemen, to start off with, let me start with you, Terence. What should we make of all this? Is this a really big deal? I mean, obviously, it's a very big deal for the people whose lives have been, you know, ruined, particularly those who have lost their jobs or their property. But what should we make of this as a broader picture? Does Zuma really have big, powerful, popular support that he's mobilizing now to liberate himself from jail?
Jesse Jackson once said that an organized minority is a political majority. And I think that when it comes to mobilizing crowds, when it comes to getting people who can coerce others to do what they want, that holds true. I don't think it really matters whether Zuma has majority support. I mean, he does have a great deal of sympathy. I believe that what we're seeing here is possibly a very small fraction of that, but it is aggressive enough to set the agenda. For me, the real problem is that this is the latest in a string of these, you know, whether we're talking about xenophobic pogroms or service delivery protests. It speaks to a society and a stateness in a condition of profound crisis. And I think that, you know, we will get out of this. I don't think that this is some sort of new normal, but we will come out of it battered and bruised with the prestige and authority of our institutions increasingly battered and just teed up for the next one.
So, Morris, I guess same question to you. Do you think that this is being centrally directed by the grand puppet master Zuma and his enormous network, or what's his role in this entire thing, and how widespread are the sentiments behind these protests and riots?
Look, I don't think Jacob Zuma is directing this from his jail cell in escorts. Obviously, this started because of President Zuma being jailed, but I think a lot of this, the vast majority of it, I think, is just opportunistic criminals who are taking opportunity to go loot and, you know, destroy businesses and so on. But there's also, this isn't a new phenomenon in South Africa. This happens every now and again, and then we have these violent protests where there'll be some spark and then people use the use that as the excuse to go loot and what have you. I mean, we can go back to the xenophobic protests, which really the first really bad one was 2007. They happen every couple of years. You know, something there'll be some altercation between a South African and, say, I don't know, Somali shop owner. Then, you know, then suddenly things just get out of hand and burning and looting starts happening. It happened in 2016 before the local government election when the ANC, I think it was Togo Didiza was going to be the ANC's candidate for mayor. And they wanted Khosi Ramakgopa, I think, the local ANC. And there was also, right. I mean, yeah, there was
yeah, a lot violent, of Pretoria was shut down. I remember that.
Exactly. The violent protests in Tshwane because of that. And so I think this is also, this is part of it. But I mean, this is inevitable in a country where we have basically 50% unemployment, 3/4 of young South Africans are unemployed. And it's, you know, any country in the world with these kinds of levels of unemployment, especially when young men are unemployed, there's lots of literature on this. If you have lots of young men who are unemployed and not in studying, what have you, then they get bored. And, you know, then if you've got a job, you're going to be too busy to go protest and so on. And that happens. I mean, also, that was part of the reason Kenya saw some ethnic violence, I think, was in 2013 when they had an election there. Then there was they had almost a low-level civil war. Because they also have a lot of the same problems South Africa has, high levels of inequality, lots of young unemployed men. And I think this is all part of it. I'm sure the vast majority of people are involved in this looting. I'm pretty sure most of them are unemployed. Most of them feel pretty hopeless about their situation. And that obviously does not excuse what's been happening. But I think this is a lot deeper than people just being upset that Jacob Zuma is now in prison in escort.
No, I think that's right. And we can see that there's actually very familiar patterns of violence that we've seen in South Africa before kind of reemerging, but they all seem to be happening at the same time rather than more isolated. So we've seen people burning, looting trucks on the N3. We've seen xenophobic attacks on shopkeepers and that kind of thing going on often in South Africa. It just all seems to be happening at the same time. So I wonder how much of this really is at all connected to Zuma. Maybe that was the sort of start of it, but now there's just people saying, well, you know, I've had a tough winter. Let me see what I can get for myself to feed my family. Or we'll use the chaos as an opportunity to steal something from trucks or that kind of thing. It really does seem far more opportunistic. So I guess the real question kind of following from this is, and Terence kind of answered it, but Marisa, your answer, do you think that this is going to grow? I mean, so far it seems to mostly be focused in inner city Joburg, KZN, parts of Mpumalanga, where apparently there's an ANC factional battle that's managed to start this now. And so there's a theory that basically when this kind of instability happens, it's almost contagious, that everyone with a gripe or a grievance or sensing an opportunity will start causing trouble. Do you think this is going to grow?
Obviously, I mean, this is just that's my feeling on it. I don't think it's going to grow. I think it's most likely going to fizzle out, just like these kind of protests have before in the past. But the core reason they're happening will not go away anytime soon, and it's probably going to be with us for a long time. An economy that's not growing, the economic destruction as a result of the lockdowns and COVID-19. This is also part of it. Who knows if we hadn't had COVID-19, if we'd be having these protests now? Possibly not, because the economy wouldn't be. The economy, of course, would still be in a state, but not the kind of state it is in now. And that's part of the problem with these lockdowns. The kind of jobs that have been lost have been jobs that generally younger, lower skilled people would be able to go get involved in. And now all these kinds of jobs are getting completely destroyed. I mean, small retailers are getting destroyed, restaurants and what have you. So I mean, the underlying reasons for this these protests or this looting is not going to go away. And as I said, I think it'll probably, like, I think this will fizzle out, especially now that we see that the army is being deployed. But yeah, it's not going to go away, and it's going to be with us for a while yet, until South Africa starts actually having an economy that works for everybody, where we start, and we need to get much higher levels of economic growth. We need 5-7% economic growth, not this tepid 1%, or if we're even lucky to see an economy growing most of the time. I mean, last year the economy basically shrank by 7%, I think it was.
Right. So I think one of the other aspects, of course, is this is a theme that we've carried on about in the show for a long time, but the poor capacity, the lack of capacity in the South African police service. So, of course, the president sort of declares, while he's giving us his little lockdown extension thing, that, you know, we're going to make sure that the N3 is open. And we've deployed large amounts of police resources to the area. And then, of course, this morning, again, it appears to have been blocked in certain places. So we'll see how this goes. But generally speaking, it really seems like the SAPs are not able to properly control anything. Often police seem to be intimidated and run away. Or maybe in other places, they know that they can act, but they're worried that if they do, it'll just turn into another Marikana massacre, which is, of course, would suit a lot of devious political interests in this country very much if that were to happen. Terence, what do you make of all that?
I think one needs to go back even further, that the government, I don't think, has ever really established itself as a force that people will listen to out of respect. Where you have local authorities, for instance, where you see money being stolen and you connect that to your own life experience and to your own lack of opportunities, why should you bother to follow the rules? We have a gnawing corruption problem in South Africa. People in high places are not following the rules. Zuma kept on saying that he sort of respected the courts, but this is all a ploy. So why listen to the courts? One can dig up particular instances. Think back to the security guard strike. I think around 70 people were killed, not a single prosecution. Think about the event that happened on one of the highways around Johannesburg around the same time, where Metro Police and SAPS officials were actually firing at each other while motorists, you know, hid under their cars. Nothing was done. No one was prosecuted. We live in a largely consequence-free zone. And I think that, sadly, there are many venal people who see in this an opportunity, and many desperate people who see in this a desperate lifeline. This is why I say that although I believe that this wildfire will burn itself out, I am afraid that it sets the scene for something like this to happen a couple of years later, simply because it's been shown that the consequences for this are often derisory.
I agree with that completely. I think that the ANC and COSATU in particular, often through the way that they've handled strikes, have kind of let the violence genie out of the bottle. When there's no consequences for violent or destructive strikes, it really has become the norm in South Africa. I mean, you know, it's. I'd be surprised if we didn't have some sort of massive disparate, enormously high number of violent protests in the country, in comparison to peaceful protests. Maurice, do you agree with Terence?
Yeah, I think so. And also, just want to say, I think the behavior of Jacob Zuma's proxies in form of Jacob Zuma Foundation and his children has been an absolute disgrace. They've encouraged this violence. The Jacob Zuma Foundation was tweeting saying they are against the violence, but this is the righteous anger of the people, which is, of course, a load of nonsense. And I just think it's absolutely disgraceful how Jacob Zuma's children have been carrying on social media. I mean, somebody tweeted a photo. It shows this lady looking at her phone. She's got a glass of wine, and her face is covered in, you know, whatever, some kind of thing to help her skin. And then the caption says, we must free Jacob Zuma, Amandla. And I think that's exactly what it was. She's tweeting from, his daughter's Duduzile. She's tweeting from the safety of wherever, some penthouse in Durban or in Kandla itself, while people are, you know, they're out there doing terrible things on behalf of her father. And these are the people who are going to suffer. They're going to they'll be arrested, possibly. I mean, Terence is right that there is a largely consequence-free zone, but people are going to be arrested there. I've already seen some people on social media have been arrested by the police and so on for their role in this looting and the protests. So And I've seen at least one person was killed in Johannesburg, a security guard. So, I mean, the blood of that man is on the Zuma's hands, I'm afraid.
Mm. No, it's not unusual, of course. We've seen this before, that the Zuma camp in the ANC, the ANC in general, but the Zuma camp in particular, are not afraid to treat their supporters as cheap, expendable cannon fodder to further their own political aims. So, Terence, let me get to this question of ethnic mobilization. So there's the claim is by a lot of people, and the fear is that this is very much following ethnic lines. And so far, the trouble seems to have mostly been in areas that have large proportions of the population are Zulu. I think I can't remember who it was in our morning meeting said that the ANC, from being completely dominated by senior Zulu figures, has now gone on to during the Zuma years has now gone on to be have no Zulus in the top six. excuse me. And yeah, I guess the question to you, Terence, is what role do you think ethnic mobilization is playing in this? Is it a big factor? Is there a sense of grievance amongst Zulu people in particular?
I think what you're dealing with here is more a kind of foundational or underlying resentment. Remember that Jacob Zuma's mobilization after he was defenestrated as the deputy president was almost explicitly ethnic in nature. Remember the 100% Zulu boy. I remember when that was happening, a gentleman I used to work with, a guy of Indian extraction who had grown up outside Durban, said that this reminded him of, you know, the friction between African and Indian communities. So he seems to, a lot of the same signifiers seem to be coming up. But don't just blame Jacob Zuma for that. He was accompanied by the communists, by the unionists, by this whole swathe of political condottieri that rode him into power. They were quite happy to deal with the ethnic factor. For President Ramaphosa now, you know, who sat as Zuma's deputy, to object to this, well, you know, it's a little bit late. This has been part of the Zuma brand, part of a brand that the ANC has accepted, if not encouraged. And let us also not forget that the manipulation of a script of identity will invariably jump fences. The ANC has focused quite relentlessly on questions of identity, usually around race. You cannot let this genie out of the bottle and say, well, just stay within these confines. Perceptive readers will remember the piece I wrote about the farm in Donnybrook that was under siege, and there were all sorts of, you know, dreadful strains of this that were coming together. There was the criminality, there was a labor dispute, there was the Zimbabweans being employed on the farm, there was the white monopoly capital. All of these things churn over and combine. Now don't be surprised if this turns on South Africa's favorite target, the foreigner in our midst. What these people have to do with Ramaphosa or Zuma is anyone's guess, but they're a handy target, and that tends to be the go-to emotion. But as long as the ANC thinks that it can play these identity games, this is pretty much the inevitable consequence. So, while I think that the president's concern is justified, I would say that we are at a moment that calls for a little introspection about how we got to this point.
No, that's exactly right. You can't constantly go up on how the Boers or the whites or whatever are plotting to, you know, enforce apartheid on everyone, and how everyone's going to lose their social grants, and it's, if you don't vote for the ANC, the whites will come back into power, and then suddenly go, no, wait, but we didn't want you to have groupthink and ethnic identity in other ways. We just wanted in this very narrow little sense. Maurice, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question that's been asked now by a couple of people. What does this mean in KwaZulu-Natal, especially with the local government elections coming up and then looking ahead to 2024? I mean, we must remember that apart from the Western Cape, the KwaZulu-Natal is the only part in South Africa that hasn't that's been governed by a different another party other than the ANC at some point. It was governed obviously by the IFP in the 90s and then in coalition with the ANC before the IFP kind of the shrank away, although they seem to be recovering. So, I mean, is it we've got to ask now is will the will people will ANC supporters in KwaZulu-Natal who were supporters of Jacob Zuma, will they continue leaving the party, and who will be the beneficiary? Will it be Inkatha? Will it be the EFF? Did pretty well actually in Natal in 2019. Will it be this African Transformation Movement, which pretty much seems to be seems
Yeah,
to be a
it's
form of
controlled by
weakness.
Zuma allies, right?
Exactly. I mean, it was formed with definitely the implicit support of Jacob Zuma. Perhaps not, and I'm sure he knew about it. As definitely Ace Magashule was definitely involved in it somehow. And Mzwanele Mani is a member of it, and he is Jacob Zuma's spokesperson now. So, I mean, that's the question. And I mean, the ANC, they lost 10 percentage points in 2019 in KwaZulu-Natal compared to the previous election, went from 64% votes to 54% in just one election, and it's quite a big drop. So I think that's probably the most that's from a macro perspective, that's something to watch. And I think my feeling is the ANC is probably going to start losing, will lose some more. But to who's the question? The EFF has been doing pretty well in urban areas in Natal, and the IFP seems to be resurging in the traditional heartlands in northern KwaZulu-Natal. So I wouldn't be surprised by 2024 if the ANC loses its majority in KZN. And who knows what the well, you know, what will the kind of butterfly effect of that will be. Maybe we'll see some IFP EFF DA coalition governing KwaZulu-Natal, which would be quite something. So, but yeah, I think but Terence is spot on. I mean, once you've unleashed this kind of race nationalist genie, you can't say, look, we must focus on the whites. And but you know, but don't focus on your own identity. You know, like don't put being a Zulu before being a South African or whatever the case is. But that's exactly what the ANC's done. And when they speak about things such as our people, they don't mean every single South African citizen. Like, that's pretty clear.
No, that's exactly right. So I guess let's talk what should government do? What should Ramaphosa be doing right now to try and stem this? I mean, is deploying the army the right thing to do? Is that enough? Terence, what do you think?
Deploying the army is always a drastic step, and I think given the way that that certain soldiers, and I certainly don't mean all of them, behaved during the lockdown, this comes with massive risks. Remember, your military is not trained or equipped or constitutionally expected to deal with internal threats. Certainly not when they're of a policing nature. They are trained to fight enemies. And I fear that someone could well be killed, you know, give a massive emotional tsunami to this whole unpleasant business. What should he be doing? Well, you know, we should have been governing the country properly. But you know, we can't undo mistakes that go back decades. What we can try and do is put as much of a stopper on this as we can. That's not an adequate response, but it's all I can think of. You have to deploy police, you have to deploy security forces as much as you can, just to get things back to whatever semblance of normality you can. You have to actually show that there are consequences for these actions, but you've got to start running the country or governing the country in a more sensible and productive manner. I think point that needs to be made is that just the last couple of days we've had people senior within government saying, well, we need to professionalize the civil service. Well, yes, that's a prerequisite of the Constitution, goes back to 1996. Look it up, great stuff. You know, so we're gonna start doing skills audits and getting these people out and getting the right people in. And you know, I can point to documents 2006, 2007, 2008 when they were saying the same thing. yes, you know, we need to professionalize and we need to get the right people in and we need to make sure that we have this glorious developmental state that will ramp us to the highlands of, you know, Singapore-style development. Well, I don't know. We haven't done it so far. Are we serious about this, or is this just something we say for the cameras every couple of years to pretend we're doing something? It's sort of performance art. I don't know.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. Government keeps doing the sort of same sort of thing where it says, "No, well, you see now we've got a plan. We apparently didn't have a plan before, even though we did. And our plan is to do what we did before, but we're going to call it by a different name." So we really are stuck in this policy madhouse where we just keep doing the same thing over and over again. Morris, what are your thoughts on solutions?
Well, just on the issue of policy, it seems that people say to you the ANC is very good at developing policy and very bad at implementing it. You hear this canard that South Africa has good policy but bad implementation, which is definitely not true, because South Africa, in general, policies are pretty bad. Things like EWC and NHR are very bad policies. And we should actually be happy that the implementation of them are terrible. But the solution to this whole thing is not a short-term solution. Putting the army on the streets, which is I'm glad I'm not Cyril Ramaphosa and I'm going to make this decision of, you know, deploying the army against your own citizens, because God forbid somebody gets killed. And unfortunately, when, you know, soldiers aren't, they're not police. They're not there to enforce law and order. They're there to fight enemy combatants, you know. So, but I mean, I don't really see what other option there is for the president or for the government at the moment. But these things, the root cause needs to be tackled. And that's things like an economy not growing. It's very high youth unemployment and high unemployment in general. I mean, as I said at the beginning of the show, every country with high levels of unemployment like this is unstable, because, I mean, it's a fact. People who have jobs don't have time to go loot and protest. People who are unemployed do. And for a lot of them, they don't see any, they have no hope. People need to have a stake in the system to defend it. And a lot of people, not through any fault of their own, it's because of the history of South Africa as well as policy decisions made since 1994 has left us with this terrible youth unemployment crisis and unemployment crisis in general. And people, you know, people are still living in terrible conditions 30 years after the end of apartheid, and doesn't look like anything's going to be changing anytime soon. So that's where the root causes have to be tackled. We need an economy that grows and that creates jobs for people. And that's the only way we'll get we'll stop this kind of thing that we see. I mean, and we're going to carry on seeing this kind of thing. Maybe by tomorrow everything will be peaceful again, but you know that's not going to be the end of it.
I just want to stress Terence's point there about making sure that there's consequences. There's an enormous amount of video footage about this kind of thing. And even if the police aren't able to stop all of these riots when they're in the middle of them taking place, although they should be trying to do that, they must find the people identified in these videos, in these photos, in all these things, and they must prosecute them with actual charges, follow through. Don't just let it slip through the cracks like so many of these things always do. And if people see that, I think it will restore a lot of confidence to the justice system just by following the basic laws that are already in place. Don't have to do anything.
You know, if I can just conclude with a sort of historical / pop culture reference. One of my favorite movies is A Bridge Too Far, about the Arnhem campaign in World War II. And there's a scene where the senior German general comes into a staff meeting and he's asked for a report, and yes, no, they're low on this and short of that, and there's no morale, and the troops are retreating. And one of his subordinates says, "So what shall we do?" And he looks at him and says, "Well, it's quite simple, we end the war." And everyone laughs. So he turns around and he looks at them, "Why in the world are you laughing?" I think that's basically the moment that the government has to come to.
Yeah, I know, that's exactly right. Anyway, I think we shall call it to a close there. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Daily Friend Show. If you want to support the Institute of Race Relations, which powers the Daily Friend, please SMS your name to 32823. It's on the banner behind me, and we'll call you back to sign you up as a friend of the Institute of Race Relations. We hope you enjoyed the show. Like I said, please like, comment, subscribe, engage, all those good things. We really want to hear from you guys. We really want to see your support. It helps us to grow and keep going and all those good things. Thank you very much. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Daily Friend Show. Have a good one, everyone.